The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On this episode, a win to finish the season as the Blues secure third place. There's the latest on the takeover and celebrations for a former Blue in Italy. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic for the penultimate time this season. This is Straight Outta Cobham. So that's that then, gang. The 2021-22 season comes to a close in a rather tepid fashion for Chelsea, but still top dogs in London again and still champions of the world. And here's a great message, which I think will cheer everybody up this morning. Producer Lucy's put it in from her godfather, Andy. It was put to the supporters club, the Saffron Blues, just to put some gloss on the season. Andy pointing out that coming back from 2-0 down against Liverpool at home, in theory, cost them the league. So that's something that all Chelsea supporters can revel in this Monday morning.
Is that sure. Saffron Walden rather than Saffron the ingredient?
The spice, yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah, yeah. It'd be weird to have a supporters club named after a spice, but never mind, maybe something for next season for somebody to think about. That was the voice of Chelsea Academy grad Sam Parkin. You can hear. Hi, Sam.
Morning, Matthew. How you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. Also with us is the Athletic's Chelsea expert, Simon Johnson. Simon, I don't know about you, but it took me a long time to come down from the dizzying highs of that game against Watford at Stamford Bridge on Sunday that you and I attended.
Yes, hello, Matt, and hello to one of our biggest fans. I promised I'd give him a shout-out. He's a big fan of the show. Charlie, I know you're listening. I told you I would. Right, on to the game, and... hilarious private joke there. I was so pumped for this. I actually arrived 2.5 hours early. I mean, I looked at my watch and went, what am I doing? And I was thinking, as I strolled up Fulham Road, I was going, oh, I remember it being a bit like this on the first day of the season against Crystal Palace, a few days after Chelsea lifted the UEFA Super Cup. And here I am attending the most meaningless game, one of the most meaningless games in Chelsea's modern history. And what a way for, technically, for the Roman Abramovich era to end. Yeah, you just think, this is not actually in keeping with the last 19 years. Nothing at stake and listening out for results elsewhere. But, yeah, nothing wrong with a bit of last day fun in the sun with a few farewells thrown in and the lap of appreciation.
Speaking of the end of the Abramovich era, by the way, must draw your attention to the joint read that Simon and Liam Toomey have teamed up on about the Roman Abramovich era. And we'll talk more about that later on. But first, let's get specific on that last day game against Watford.
Here's James. Oh, that's a good cross. And it has made its way in. And Ross Barkley can celebrate his first Premier League goal of the season right at the campaign's very conclusion, 3 minutes after the concession of the equaliser, just as it looked as though Chelsea were going to end the season with more dropped points at home. Ross Barkley has come up with the winning goal. Chelsea 2, Watford 1.
It wouldn't be Chelsea without letting a lead slip, would it? But wait, late plot twist, up steps Ross Barkley to win it. It happened, we know this. Simon and I, as mentioned, were there at the bridge to witness it live. Bit of disappointment, Simon, when the team sheets dropped that there were no Academy players within it. Harvey Vale was present. He got his Academy Player of the Year award and a big hug from Thomas Tuchel as well pre-kickoff, but felt like a bit of a missed opportunity.
Yes. Because, yeah, for example, Kennedy getting his first Premier League game for 5 years for Chelsea. You just sort of think, is he the future? Or could Lewis Hall have been playing there? I know who I'd rather have seen, even though Kennedy came up with an assist. Desperately trying to make my promise of doing a Kennedy piece come to fruition. I'm sorry. Sorry, Kennedy, if you were waiting for it. I was instructed to do something else, something a bit bit rogue. But yeah, I was a bit disappointed. Harvey Vale, it's great to see him there, but basically he's been unwell. So there was a reason why he wasn't involved. But yeah, a bit of a shame. But, at least we got to see a few players for the last time. You know, some great signings like Sal Niguez. Thanks for the memories.
Never lost a game as a Chelsea player. Familiar tale, wasn't it, Sam?
Despite his best efforts.
Yeah, quite, yeah. It was 72% possession in the end, 19 shots for Chelsea. It's kind of the same thing that we've been seeing ad nauseum all season, isn't it? Albeit with the surprise that they actually went on and won the game here. But overall, very reflective of what's been a disappointing campaign at Stamford Bridge, particularly.
Yeah, just the 9 wins, wasn't it? I think in 19 games and 5-1 ones. And I think when you look at the list of results now, retrospectively, it's where the challenge was lost. It's why it became quite mediocre. There was that series of 1-1s, wasn't it? I think 4 in 5 games or 3 in 4 games at Stamford Bridge in the winter, which was the end really of any title challenge. And yeah, I suppose that stat that's been doing the rounds in the last 48 hours, that they've not been behind in any game at half-time this season in the Premier League. I think that's right, isn't it?
And it's the first time that's ever happened to a team in the Premier League.
And that sums it up, doesn't it? They've not been great at managing games, to state the bleeding obvious, and they've not taken their chances when they've been in the ascendancy so many times. In those games, home to Burnley, Everton, Leicester, Manchester United, and again, I suppose, yesterday. But yeah, it was a dead rubber, wasn't it? And it was a very flat end of season game, but they were able to rally themselves and get a late winner. Great to see Ben Chilwell. Some good performances from, I suppose, Barkley when he came on. Silva, I thought, was very good. Again, Mason Mount trying to make things happen. But yeah, a flat end of season game. And I thought the flaws that had been there throughout the season were in evidence again.
We'll talk about some individuals. You mentioned Kennedy, Simon. You probably won't ever get to write the long read on him, but we can talk about him a little bit more here. As you said, featuring a Premier League game for Chelsea for the first time in 5 years against the club where he spent a glorious 16-minute loan spell a few years ago. A first half of two halves for him, I thought, because at the start, everything he did was coming off. It was a lovely assist for the Havertz opener. But then he kind of felt that everything had to be a flick or a trick. And by an hour, he cramped up so badly he had to come off. If it was an audition to play as, you know, Ben Chilwell's understudy next season, I'm not sure he passed it unless we're going to reduce games to 25 minutes.
Yeah, but is anyone really surprised that he was a little bit rusty or lacking match sharpness, given one can only say it was one of the most pointless loan recalls that you can remember? Obviously, if Marcus Alonso had got an injury as well, then he would have played a lot more. But sometimes I think we do have to question Tuchel a little bit. Not saying that all these guys that played yesterday, these fringe guys, are the answer or were the answer. But given how tired some of the regulars have looked, you do sort of think, couldn't have Tuchel given these guys a bit more minutes just to give them a go, really? I mean, you sort of compare his management of the squad with, or certainly his trust of the squad with, for example, Jurgen Klopp's, who massively rotated his squad just recently against Southampton, and they were able to get the job done. Yeah, am I saying Ross Barkley is the answer? No, but you know, I'm sure he could have contributed a bit more than he did in the second half of the season. Same with Kennedy. You know, there were some games with Alonso that you could tell he was having one of his Alonso-type games where he's going through the motions a little bit. And you sort of think of other players that were played out of position at wing-back. But getting back to the point about Kennedy, I'll be very surprised if, well, never say never, I suppose, but I'll be very surprised if we see him in a Chelsea shirt again. I'm sure another attempt to loan him out or to sell him permanently will be made. It's hard to see where he's 26 now. You sort of feel like he's another of these players that is frittering away his career a little bit, getting minutes here, there, and not regularly enough.
Yeah, he's got another year on his contract. We'll talk about Tony Rudiger shortly, but you mentioned Ben Chilwell, Sam. I just wonder from a player's perspective, psychologically, I would assume there'll be a big boost for him, the fact that he's just been out on the grass playing in a Premier League game rather than doing his rehab and then having a break and going straight back into pre-season. That'll carry him through, won't it, the next couple of weeks, the fact that he's actually got some football.
Yeah, and he won't be in doing his rehabilitation throughout his summer holidays now. I remember doing something similar when I was at Ipswich, missed the majority of the season, got my 2 minutes at Plymouth Argyle away and just said, see you later to the physio. I'll have me 6 weeks off now. I think the game has changed somewhat, but yeah, he'll be a little bit behind. But psychologically, really good for him. He'll probably have to be managed, actually, you know, come to think of it, when he goes back to the start of the arduous kind of first few days of pre-season. Again, it's changed. A lot of it's with the ball now. The long distance stuff is no longer around, but they'll have to drip feed him throughout this summer and into the pre-season program, I would suggest. And then even monitor his minutes in those first couple of pre-season games that are in the diary. But yeah, great. One of the best moments of yesterday. Not my favourite moment. My favourite moment was the Chelsea fans singing about Steven Gerrard slipping as the Dan Gosling header found its way into the net. So it was the least bothered any set of supporters have been about conceding the goal this season, because that cheer had just gone round the Matthew Harding. I think the word had spread that City had just got their third. So that was quite enjoyable. Even the goal was such a mess. I just watched it back this morning. James and Azpilicueta, I don't know what those two were doing, but there was no one on the right-hand side for Chelsea. I was thinking, who's playing right wing for Chelsea right now? And I watched the subsequent 10 minutes and Ziyech, Havertz, Barkley, I think all of them wanted to be in the kind of number 10 position or false nine position. So there was no one on that right-hand side of the pitch. So I think if it was a more meaningful game, Thomas Tuchel would have been pulling his hair out. I think probably Ziyech should have been tracking back and helping out with Messina.
I thought you were going to mention the brilliant Malang Sarr at the back post.
Totally. That was ball watching to the best degree. That any young kid watching that
just saying, oh Dan, there you go, have it, help yourself to a goal, just to see the season out, see your time in the Premier League out. But no, I just want to jump in on the Chilwell chat very quickly. Tuchel's come out and said that he will be given a plan, a bit like Callum Hudson-Odoi, to start before the main group start. But it's still really, really positive, because I remember when he first did the injury and there was talk of him like, oh, maybe August, maybe September, question mark about the World Cup, like if you've got your England hat on. For him to be on the pitch at all in May is fantastic for him, for the club, and for England. And the look on Mason Mount's face, because he was the one that came off their best mates, had a big smile, gave him a big hug, because he would have seen Ben Chilwell at that low point of coming off that awful knee injury and seeing him battle back from this. And fair play to Ben Chilwell. He's been sorely missed. Actually, the first inkling we had that I sort of thought, oh, he's definitely going to be involved today, was when, because I got this so early, as I mentioned earlier on, we're seeing him and Reece James walking out on the pitch together, sort of like an hour and a bit beforehand. And it's just like, that's what those two used to do when they were both fit. And it brought back memories of when Chelsea were playing brilliant football week in, week out with those two to the fore. And Tuchel will be having his fingers crossed that if those two can stay actually fit next season, he's got a lot of work to do on this squad. But if those two are fit, then that's a huge, huge sort of boost, a huge lift to their chances of actually competing throughout the season.
Finally, on Chilwell, Simon, Gareth Southgate won't pick him for the Nations League games for England over the summer, will he?
No chance. It doesn't make any sense. He won't be fit enough anyway.
Good. So 1-0 at halftime. Then in the second half, as Sam mentioned, Dan Gosling got his customary goal in front of the shed before Ross Barkley went on and won it in stoppage time. That came after there was a hashtag classy touch from Thomas Tuchel as he bought Tony Rudiger off early, quite early, I thought, actually, midway through the second half, to get his standing ovation. Players appreciate that kind of thing, Sam?
He looked a bit bemused, didn't he, initially? But then I think when the applause kind of gathered around the stands, he seemed to enjoy it, and he got a high five from everyone. And yeah, I think that was a nice moment. And I think, I don't know, he's obviously achieved a lot at Chelsea, won a lot of silverware, but I suppose his recovery in the last 18 months is what I'll remember him most for. I think he was training away from the group for a period, if memory serves me right. So to be reintroduced by Thomas Tuchel and be so good over the last 18 months is testament to him, really. He fought his way back in, and his level of consistency has been amazing. Cult hero, you know, plays up to a bit of a caricature, doesn't he? Getting involved and playing to the crowd. But the fans love all that, and he's certainly given everything. So he goes with everyone's best wishes, obviously, apart from when he invariably comes up against Chelsea in some kind of European competition.
It was a good illustration, wasn't it, Simon, of how much you'll be missed? Because when he went off, Azpilicueta almost scored that ridiculous own goal. And then, as we mentioned, the goal that Watford scored, Rudiger might have been able to prevent that. He's going to take some replacing.
Yeah, and it's not just him as a defender, it's him as a personality. Mm. And you could argue it's the latter which Chelsea will miss most, because Rudiger has his moments defensively. But him as a personality, it's just that these kind of characters are hard to find. Chelsea don't have enough of them as it is, and now they're arguably losing the biggest, the leader without being the captain, the leader by example, the one that gets stuck in those challenges, not afraid to walk that tightrope of between yellow card. It's a bit Diego Costa like in some ways, that sort of that ability to sort of do nasty things but not actually get punished for them. Because Costa did a lot of stuff and didn't actually get red carded, I think, in apart from Everton, I think he got a red card. And then there was one retrospective one. But Costa, managed to escape a lot of punishment, and so is Rudiger. But it sends out a message to the dressing room, that fight, that kind of... And, yeah, so they're missing it. They're going to miss him on two fronts. I also thought, I don't know whether if anyone's read it, but I really highly recommend anyone for people to go to his piece, his very heartfelt piece that he's done with Players Tribune. And he also sort of, again, perhaps sort of points a finger as to why he's leaving, or certainly one of the major factors why he's leaving, and the lack of contract talks between August and January, which doesn't sort of put the club in a very good light. But Tuchel talked post-match about the need to rebuild this squad to replace key players like Rudiger. That's why he's sticking around. He's not going on holiday yet. So Chelsea will already have their targets lined up, and Jules Koundé, a guy that they basically agreed a deal for last summer, will be sort of one they expect to get through the door pretty soon once the takeover is complete.
So once the game was complete, we got the customary lap of honour / lap of appreciation, depending on your preference. How did it go down, Simon? I must confess I scarpered at that point.
Well, it was the usual lack of organised thing, where sort of like the players and their family members just stood about for a while, and it took someone in a suit. I don't know who he was. I didn't recognise him, but basically to sort of tell them, no, you actually need to walk around. Like that's the lap. That's where the lap comes in. But it was all good natured. I was pleased to see Andreas Christensen there. I was a bit concerned that he wouldn't even be there to say goodbye at all. He obviously not named in the squad. It was very low key. He was with Ruben Loftus-Cheek quite a lot. But as we discussed in the last pod, he's done a lot in the last 10 years. He should have been on the pitch. It's right that he was on the pitch at least to say some kind of goodbye. But yeah, you're looking out and sort of just seeing how many players' futures are in question. And there's an awful lot of them. Obviously, not everyone's going to go. But yeah, I always find the last day sort of one of those, I wonder if he'll be back next year. What I should mention, actually, Matt, of course, This is very amiss of me. Todd Bowley and Hansjörg Vice, however you pronounce his name, were they stood at the front or the end of the tunnel, depending how you want to look at it, and greeted every single person that came out, including obviously starting with Tuchel and his coaching staff, then every player. I particularly took note of the warm hug between Todd Bowley and Romelu Lukaku. I was sort of going, oh, shall I read into that? But that was good to see again, you know, that Todd Bowley hasn't officially taken over yet, but the way he's acting is as a man that's already getting his regime under the way and making nice with the personnel.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about Bowley in a second or two. I just want to finish up on the lap of honour, Sam, because I'm fascinated to know what a player thinks of that. Because unless you've actually won something, surely you don't really want to be just walking around waving at people going, thanks for coming, sorry we didn't win anything.
Yeah, it's a bit embarrassing, I think, if memory serves me right. You'd rather probably just get the... I don't know how it works on Saturday, Simon, Sunday, sorry, but you'd rather just get the whistle blown and then get it out of the way then, rather than go back inside and have to get yourself ready to go out there and maybe face a few disgruntled supporters.
And put a commemorative t-shirt on and wait.
And face a few disgruntled supporters if it hasn't gone particularly well. But I don't think that was the case, as Simon said. I mean, it was close to being not a vintage season by any stretch, but, for a couple of missed penalties and such like, it could have been a couple of trophies. So, yeah, they don't need to hang their heads in shame, do they, at all? But there's a lot that's gone on this year. Had they won those trophies, we probably wouldn't be talking about the amount of changes that we're anticipating this summer. But yeah, it was never something you embraced unless obviously you had silverware to show off or you were going into a playoff campaign or into a final or whatever.
Chelsea fans were obviously in good mood because of events elsewhere. But Chelsea also sold it as sticking around, the reason to stick around, the player of the year being announced after the game.
Oh,
so
yeah,
the Academy Player of the Year and the Women's Player of the Year were announced pre-match, Harvey Vail, Sam Kerr. Sam Kerr wasn't there, sadly, to pick up her award.
She's on the lash in Barcelona with Erin Cuthbert, which from their Instagram looks like a lot of fun.
I think they made the right call. I should have done that as well. But yeah, so we had this, but after the game, we'll do the men's player, sort of build that anticipation, hang around. And it was Cesar Azpilicueta who made the announcement. I was also waiting for Azpilicueta to perhaps make an announcement of his own, listening out for him to say, adios, I don't know any Spanish for I'm off to Barcelona. But I was listening out for it. I had my Google Translate at the ready. But no, he announced that Mason Mount won the Player of the Year award. Didn't get my vote. I went for Thiago Silva, I think. We discussed that in the last show. I just thought he was very, very consistent for the whole season. And at 37, very, very impressive. Could have gone to Rüdiger as well. I thought it was between those two. But, of course, Mason Mount has done wonderfully again, getting double figures for goals and assists. And it just shows how popular and understandably so he is with the fan base, because they identify with him as one of their own, and he is one of their best players for sure.
So he's player of the season. We'll do a proper deep dive into the campaign on Thursday when we record our final pod of the term. So you mentioned then, Simon, Todd Bowley on hand at Stamford Bridge. And this time he actually got to see the team win a game, which is something that he's been waiting for quite a while, it seems. I mean, the fact that, as you say, he's shaking hands, kissing babies and making friends with everybody suggests that this is getting pretty close now.
Yeah, I mean, we're just all waiting for the announcement, aren't we? Yes, there's been some more curveballs in the last week or so, more fears and... oh, this could happen and what's Roman doing with the money and all that. But, you know, Todd Bowley's giving off all the body language of a man that knows that he's soon to be the front man. He's not he doesn't have the most money in this consortium, but he will be the front man of this club. And he's making himself very, very visible from the outset. And I'm sure Chelsea fans who already sort of seem to want him to be the one out of all the those that bid for the club. He was always quite popular, it seemed. But that, I think they'd appreciate, you know, seeing what they're seeing. You know, this is not, when you compare to perhaps some other clubs with American owners where you don't see their presence. Someone has either told him, or it's from his own volition, that I need to be seen. I need to be sort of shown at games. Of course, that's what Chelsea fans grew accustomed to with Abramovich for the most part. He was at most of the games showing his enthusiasm. So, yeah, let's hope. I feel like we've been saying this for several weeks. Let's hope we get an announcement. It's probably going to be on Thursday during our show. And what a way to go out. And then we can all move on, which is what I think everyone wants to do, including ourselves on this pod.
Sam, I'm not going to use the word/phrase in tray, lest I make an unwanted appearance on the Football Clichés podcast, also available from The Athletic. But what's the first thing that he's going to do, do you think, Todd Bowley? I mean, is it literally like, let's get some signings in, to you know, appease supporters and make a good early impression? Or is there something else? Is it getting... making sure that Thomas Tuchel and Emma Hayes are happy? Is there one specific thing you can think of that will be top of his priorities?
Probably that conversation with the manager, isn't it? How they're going to attack next season and give him the tools to get closer to the top two. I think that's the most important thing, because I think about the players just get on with it. The players will be interested to see who's going to walk into the dressing room in pre-season, how they're going to improve the squad. I don't think the owner essentially can, like Simon just referenced, that hug between him and Lukaku. It's going to be at the manager's discretion ultimately, isn't it? How much they want to use certain players, or if Lukaku has a future, the owner can say to Thomas Tuchel, well, what do you think about Romelu Lukaku? You know, do we want to cash in on him now? And I think ultimately that's going to be the manager's decision. So I don't think the owner will play too much of a part in that. I think for him, it'll just be, you know, identifying some targets with the manager and the people in charge of the signings and going from there.
You can have a decent whack at the transfer market as well, can't they, Simon? Because, you know, it's easy to forget they actually turned a profit in it last season, despite spending the best part of £100 million on Lukaku. So there's no particular pressure in terms of FFP, if indeed that even still exists.
Yeah. And of course, they could raise some revenue from player sales as well. Fans will be worried about perhaps who those sales might involve. Is there a risk of repeat of last summer where some of the best youngsters were offloaded, for example, to help fund Lukaku's fee? And you sort of think of the quality of youngsters that clubs would be willing to spend an absolute fortune on, players like Conor Gallagher, Levi Colwill. I think it's important for the club to, and I'm sure Tuchel will definitely have a say in this, but I think it's important for the club to keep these guys. I think Conor Gallagher is, I mean, both will be involved in pre-season with Chelsea, but I think they're the future. They're the sort of the injection of youth and energy and quality that the club can bring into the squad without spending a penny. They're homegrown players with a lot of potentials to get an awful lot better. So, Chelsea will have money to spend, but I think everyone should be realistic here. It's going to take a few windows, I think, for Chelsea to build a squad capable of taking on Liverpool, Man City in the Premier League. I think there is a significant gap, as has been shown once again in the table between them, because it's not the one-off occasions. It's not the sort of, as Chelsea showed four times against Liverpool, they can go toe-to-toe with them in games. It's the relentlessness of the season and being able to perform every single time. And that's where Chelsea go fall short compared to those two.
Yeah, not drawing at home to Burnley and getting smashed by Brentford. Sam, I thought this just occurred to me, Colwill. Obviously, from what we hear, the club want him to stay next season. I guess a good selling point to him would be, come and learn next to Thiago Silva for a year. I mean, there can't be many better teachers for him than that.
No, not at all. I mean, he's got a big week coming up, hasn't he? I mean, he could be obviously promoted to the Premier League with Huddersfield. He's had an exceptional season. And yeah, as Simon says, I think Yeah, and thinking back to your previous question, Matt, that's a conversation obviously he's got to have with Thomas Tuchel in terms of the approach last summer and how it should probably be different during this off-season. The likes of Gallagher and Colwell, they've got to be introduced into this squad. They've been exceptional during their loan moves. Conor Gallagher probably gets in the team right now, doesn't he? Probably, undoubtedly. And I mean, Colwell has to be around it. He's been magnificent at Huddersfield. So gives you that balance on the left side as well, which obviously we think he would have been able to do. Tomori potentially as well could have played that role, I'm sure. So he's naturally going to fit in there if Thomas Tuchel persists with the back three. But yeah, Thiago Silva staying and still performing as he did yesterday, where I thought he was one of Chelsea's best players. And would have pushed Mason Mount close for that player of the year. Absolutely perfect. Perfect for him to, just spend time around, I suppose. And Thiago Silva seems the type that will be, you know, very open to passing on that advice. But yeah, Colwell's got everything, I think, to be a top Premier League defender. And I'm sure he will be drip fed into a side next year. Hopefully it's at Chelsea, but a Premier League loan would be an obvious next step as well if they didn't want to keep him around.
So Levi Colwell, Chelsea Academy graduate, central defender. Thiago Silva, former AC Milan defender. Put those two things together. What do you sort of come up with? Fikayo Tomori? We'll hear from him next.
Siamo noi, siamo noi. I campioni dell'Italia siamo noi. Mister, tutto meritato per il nostro allenatore. 2022.
Well, it might have been a forgettable end to the season for Chelsea, but that certainly wasn't the case for former Blues Fikayo Tomori and Olivier Giroud. And still current Blue Timoe Bakayoko, who was stogieing it up in the aftermath of AC Milan celebrating their first Scudetto in 11 years, courtesy of a final day 3-0 win at Sassuolo. Our friend Liam Toomey was there for The Athletic and he sent us this voice note.
Hello and welcome to Reggio Emilia, where I am standing overlooking the Milan party bus. A few hours ago it was the Milan team bus, now it's very much a party bus. The drinks are flowing, the music's booming. It's going to take them quite a while to leave this stadium, I think, and go somewhere where they've no doubt got more festivities planned. Fikayo Tomori is down below me kissing the Scudetto trophy. He said the Scudetto was the first word of Italian he ever learned. Well, now he knows its true meaning. He's a league champion at a professional level. And Olivier Giroud, what a player. He turns 36 in September and he's just won his seventh major trophy since he turned 30. He came up big when Milan needed it today. They never looked in danger of losing this game. They only needed a draw to hold off Inter and win this title. But they went at Sassuolo from the start, 100 miles an hour. Those two early goals from Giroud really relaxed them. They were 3-0 up at half-time. Rafael Leao in particular was just running all over Sassuolo. He looks a serious player. But anyway, back to the Chelsea flavour of all of this. You had Tomori cementing his status as the outfielder who's played the most minutes for Milan this season. What an incredible achievement for a guy who originally came here on loan halfway through the last campaign. And there are a lot of Milan fans still around this stadium who have not even begun to make the trip back to Milan. They want to greet the team bus as it leaves, just as they did when it arrived. There were thousands of them, tens of thousands of them, far more than could actually fit into the stadium here to welcome the team bus a few hours ago. And then when I actually got into the Mappe, I was stunned to find it was basically a Milan home game. Three of the four stands were a sea of red and black. And even the Sassuolo end had a sizable contingent of Milan supporters. This was clearly, you know, a pre-arranged celebration. When the final whistle went, all the players ran onto the pitch. Tomori and Giroud had been bouncing up and down arm in arm for several minutes. They both haired on. And then they all very quickly scarpered and tried to get back down the tunnel because thousands of fans ran onto the pitch as well. It seems pitch invasions are back in vogue all over Europe. They were eventually cleared away long enough for the trophy presentation before they ran back on. And now the Milan players are just taking their time, soaking it all in. I saw Timoe Bakayoko with a cigar in his mouth. Serious Michael Jordan vibes from Bakayoko tonight with his entourage. They're all going to have a really good night. I'm going to go off and write now, because that is actually my job, not watching people drink beer. So this is me signing off from Reggio Emilia. Back to you, Matt.
Well, let's hear from the man himself too. Liam caught up with Tomori after the game and began by asking, after all his success at Chelsea at every youth level, how did it feel to be a champion as a professional at the very top level?
There's actually no words, really. I came here a year and a half ago and, I knew that this team, we could win it. And this year, we just gave everything. Every game was difficult, and I thought we grew as the season was going on. And now, now we've won. It's like, there's no words. It's just mad, absolutely mad.
It ended up being one big party today, didn't it? It's almost like a home game.
The thing is, I know, it's like the party's just started. So, I've lost all my energy. I've lost my voice almost. But, I'm just drained, but I'm so happy that we've managed to do it. All the hard work we did the whole season, and now to have the Scudetto at the end of it, it's mad.
You said before that was the first Italian word we'd learned.
No, when I first came here, everyone was talking about it, and in the interviews they were saying it. So now that we have it, it's there's just no words.
You spoke before about how you threw yourself into life, into Italy, into Milan, really embraced the culture. Mm. But on the pitch as well, you've ended up playing more minutes than any other outfielder this season.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Could you have imagined that at the start of
the year? No, I mean, year and a half ago, I was at Chelsea, I wasn't playing a lot at all. And, it's difficult to stay motivated at that time because you're just thinking, what's going to happen? I'm not playing. And then someone would have told me in a year and a half, you'll win the Scudetto with Milan. I would have thought you were crazy, but
yeah.
The fact that I'm here and it's happened, I have so many emotions going through my head, through my body, everything. It's mad. My friends are here. I saw them during the game. I saw them after the game. Obviously, with all the fans on the pitch. Yeah, it was absolutely mad.
You mentioned, about the change going to Milan. I know that Chelsea fans are super happy for you right now to see what you've done. There was a bit of a sliding doors element for them, I think, where you left and a couple of days later the coach changed, the system changed, and started playing with three at the back. Did that ever come into your mind?
No, I mean, once I came to Milan, I wanted to be here.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, I saw how motivated the team was, how motivated the coach was. Even when I came here, it was COVID, but so the fans couldn't come in the stadiums, but I could still feel the San Siro, I could still feel the fans, everything like that. And ever since I've been here, since the first minute, it's been amazing. And I couldn't have asked for anything more. And to finish the season with something like Scudetto is indescribable.
When you first came, it wasn't immediately clear whether Milan would activate the option to take you permanently. Was that your goal when you came, to do so well and to adapt so well?
My goal when I first came was just to give all I could.
Yeah.
It's been a while, like I said, since I played. So the fact that I was able to come here and I was given the opportunity to play, I was so happy and so grateful for that. And the manager, all the team, everyone, the minute I came here, they supported me, they showed faith in me, and like you said, I played the most minutes. I didn't even know that, but even despite my injuries, everything like that, the manager still kept faith in me. Times when maybe I didn't do the right things on the pitch, or made mistakes, or I had an upset conversation, or whatever it is, things that happened on the pitch, the manager still kept on playing me, still kept on showing me faith, and it's crazy, it's mad.
Have you had a message from Tammy yet?
Probably. I haven't checked it. There was literally no signal in the change room, but I've got loads of messages. You can see loads of messages coming through now. But it's been mad, and Tammy and I were actually talking and saying hopefully I win the Scudetto and then he wins the Nations League on Wednesday. So now we've done this, I was going to cheer him on anyway, but yeah, definitely we should know more now.
And just finally, a word on Olivier. Came up big today. You knew what a big game play was at Chelsea. But I make that now 7 major trophies since he turned 30.
Yeah,
he's incredible, isn't he?
Yeah, I remember when I heard whispers that he was going to come to Milan, I said to him, come to Milan, let's win the Scudetto. And like you said, it's happened sooner than probably we imagined, but we won it. It's mad.
Oh, Simon, it's difficult not to come back to this point of Chelsea really shouldn't have sold for Kaio Tomori, should they? I mean, you could maybe even say the same for Olivier Giroud, given the way the season's gone.
Well, any regular listener of this podcast will know that this is could almost be called the Giroud fan club podcast, you know, because we championed for Giroud to play more than he did throughout his time. Yes, you could argue, you know, his age, you have to move on at some point. But, you know, Tuchel barely played him from February to May, if memory serves, last season, after he scored that goal of the season, Chelsea's goal of the season at Atletico Madrid. So Tuchel made it pretty clear that he wanted to move on. But I really like Giroud. He would have been a really good squad player again this season. He, of course, wanted to play more regularly. You have to say it's not just Chelsea's decision. Giroud wanted to go because he wasn't playing enough. And, of course, he has this, you know, he wants to play for France at the World Cup. But yeah, no surprise he's gone to AC Milan and done the business there. He's a class act.
Okay, goal! I got a Giroud! Olivier Giroud! Siamo venuti qua su per vedere segnare Giroud.
But of course, Tomori, out of the two decisions or out of the two sort of scenarios, rubbed in even more by what's going on with losing Christensen and Rudiger. It's 25 million rising to 30 million was the fee. Absolute steal for AC Milan. And bizarrely, no kind of buyback clause either. Very, very strange. You know, if Chelsea were to try and buy him now, for example, you're looking at probably double what they sold him for. So another question mark over the business dealings of the club, because Tomori, I'm really happy for him. Weirdly frozen out under Frank Lampard after Lampard was the one that gave him the chance in 2020. He just disappeared without trace. And that, you know, whilst you can point the finger at the hierarchy for their role in his departure, the seeds were sown by his treatment under Lampard. He by that stage, he was very keen to get away from Chelsea. And there was very little that I think by that stage that Chelsea could have done to persuade him to stay. I just find it very odd that the terms were so favourable to AC Milan, given the reputation Chelsea have of driving a hard bargain.
Yeah, and their recruitment's been excellent, Milan, and they're owned, of course, these days by an American hedge fund. So maybe something for Chelsea to learn from that. For Tomori, though, Sam, I mean, for a 24-year-old to go and win the Serie A title with AC Milan, I mean, that is an incredible story, isn't it? You know, one of the greatest teams, greatest names in world football. What a thing for him to have achieved.
Yeah, and it feels there's always been a reluctance for young players to make the move abroad. Yeah, very jealous of him. He's learnt Italian impeccably, so it would seem from the outside that he's gone over there and given it everything, similar to maybe when Jonathan Woodgate went to Spain, threw himself into the lifestyle. I just echo what Simon says. I mean, maybe not technically brilliant, but good enough with the ball. Obviously, he's an out-and-out defender. And that recovery pace that he would have had above anyone probably in that Chelsea squad this year would have been so beneficial. We've spoken about that quite a lot. You know, Thomas Tuchel picking his side, dependent on who they're up against, getting Trevor Chalobah into that back line. Tomori's pace would have been an asset. Maybe Frank Lampard felt he just got physically dominated in some games because of his size at centre-half, and that probably doesn't happen as often in Serie A, but I'm struggling here really, because I think he ultimately had the capability to be a top quality defender for Chelsea, and he's showing that for AC Milan, and even more strange because he had that opportunity in that season at Derby where he did so well under Lampard, so, and played, you know, regularly initially under his tenure. So yeah, really baffled by it, but yeah, all credit to him. Really pleased, and yeah, jealous that I didn't get a taste of Italian lifestyle during my career.
Just quick add on. Surely he's got to be in the England squad.
Oh, it has to be, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's been bizarrely ignored up to now by Southgate, but if he's ignored this time, especially with it feels like the dearth of defenders in form, he has to be looked at this summer for sure.
What's Gerhi's involvement been so far?
He has a cap, yeah. He won one in, was it, yeah, March? Yeah. Won a couple, yeah. So he'll be in there. I mean, you know, it's going to be tough to push the likes of in-form Harry Maguire, Tyrone Mings, Connor Cody out of the way, isn't it? But yeah, maybe they'll get a go. As I'm sure will Tammy Abraham, who has now scored 29 goals in his first season at Roma. He got a couple on Friday night as they beat Torino to round off their campaign. And he'll be involved in a final on Wednesday night. They take on Feyenoord in the first ever UEFA Conference League final that's been played in Tirana. So good luck to Tammy. One other little piece of news. Christoph Lolichon announced on Twitter on Sunday night that he's leaving Chelsea. He was head of goalkeeping. He'd worked from first team level to helping loan players and working in the recruitment department too. But after 15 years, he is saying goodbye. He's been, obviously, Simon, a consistent figure around the club for a long time now, albeit maybe not in quite as hands-on a role in recent years with the first team as he was previously. He was big for Petr Cech, right?
Massive for Petr Cech. Like their relationship was very, very tight. So, yeah, if you sort of, that alone, you sort of go, well, if Christoph Lolichon was part of, you know, the best goalkeeper, arguably, in Chelsea's history, Peter Bonetti will be, someone will be voting for him. But that alone sort of should make people be grateful for his contribution. But he also, his last sort of significant contribution to Chelsea Football Club was Édouard Mendy. I mean, he was the driving force behind that deal. He identified him a few years ago. Told Petr Cech about him when Cech was still at Arsenal. Also, that indicates, you know, where Cech's head was at in terms of his post-playing career. So yeah, he may not have been Jose Mourinho's favourite member of staff, certainly second time around. But yeah, he certainly played a big role during the last 15 years.
Good luck to him with whatever he does next. We're just about finished for today. I do want to draw your attention again, though, to that joint read that Liam and Simon have teamed up for on the Roman Abramovich era. Give us a bit of a taste of it, please, Simon.
Well, we were asked to sort of pick out certain subjects to write about. So it's not all Abramovich related, but it's all Abramovich era related. And of course, there's so many things to choose from. I'll talk about my subjects, obviously, because I'm biased, because they're brilliant. But obviously, I picked out, for example, you had to go Jose Mourinho. You sort of think of the manager that best sums up Chelsea under Abramovich, taking on the elite. It's sort of Mourinho and Abramovich go hand in hand, don't they? Then they go into the rivalries, the love affair with the Champions League. Liam writes about Eden Hazard, who sort of deserves his own subject. But there's the Chelsea women are covered, the academy. We've written a lot. We could have written a lot more. Yeah, written a lot sort of almost comes with a warning. But honestly, we've tried to do it justice, because it's been, whether you're a critic of Abramovich or a fan of Abramovich, you cannot deny the massive impact he has had, not just on Chelsea, but football. Like, football has changed. The wage bill and transfer fees have changed because, you have to say, Abramovich, you know, his arrival moved the goalposts. And you sort of think of foreign owners that have come in. The Premier League has, it was huge before, but it's become a lot bigger, and you sort of think Abramovich played a big part in that, whether you like him or not. So yeah, we've tried to do him justice. Of course, a very controversial figure, but Chelsea fans were still singing his name on Sunday, and I think they always will, because it's been some ride that they've been on, and they've seen things that they never thought they'd ever see.
Yep, the end of a hugely significant era in the history of the club. Elsewhere on The Athletic, really good read by Carl Anker on the chaos of the final day of the Premier League season, which totally passed Simon and I by until we watched Match of the Day last night, I think. Sam, before we go, I wanted a word from you, please, on Mike Dean on Sunday. Fairly theatrical in a lot of his mannerisms. I kept a close eye on his warm-up. Luckily, the monitor right at the top of the East End spent a prolonged period watching him do his warm-up. And let's just say he was aware that the camera was on him. But 560 games, only ref to ever get to 100 red cards. He's a character, isn't he? You know, and actually, the one thing you would say about Mike Dean is he can be a bit irritating in his actions, but he's a pretty consistent and decent referee. So, you know, he will be missed given the standards that we sometimes see across the league these days.
Yeah, and I've had a few dealings with him off the pitch at Stockley Park in between his VAR shifts, and he often pops into where we're doing the Football League stuff and checks on Tranmere Rovers' progress. So, that's a nice trait, I suppose, that he still follows his local club and will be best remembered by me for standing on the terracing at Forest Green Rovers in the driving rain, wasn't it? Standing on top of one of the one of the barriers, so no less. But yeah, he's not my least favourite referee. Can I say that? Yeah, I'll go with that. Well done.
How do I follow that? So actually,
he was pretty moved, wasn't he, Simon, at full time? I don't know if you noticed that, but he looked like he was holding back tears when he blew the whistle for the final time.
So this was the task I was given, because Chelsea Watford, who cares, right? Even the fans didn't care. They were more worried about Liverpool blowing another title. So I did actually watch Mike Dean's every move, and I've started writing the piece before the podcast started. I've got to finish it now before I get told off after we stop here. And yeah, he was as entertaining as ever, but he didn't produce a single card. So he was in a good mood, but I did, and at least he's just done the motion there. I found the way he blew up for full time was fantastic. It was the double, there was a two hands up and then I've never seen that from a ref before. Maybe he's done
it before.
He only did two
toots, though. I thought it was three normally. I was anticipating.
Well, he's gone rogue, hasn't
he? It was just
the last one.
Yeah, no third.
And in terms of the warm up, Sam, I also thought he was kind of doing it to the beat. You know, like it was like, oh, is he auditioning for Strictly? It was like, I thought, oh, he's got a bit of rhythm there. So yes. Mike Dean, actually, like, you sort of think of Chelsea fans sort of run, you know, any controversy. I can't remember any sort of Chelsea-related controversy. The only one was actually in Chelsea's favour when Gabriel was sent off, having been brilliantly wound up by Diego Costa. And his decision was retrospectively, I think, reversed, and Costa ended up getting punished instead. I don't think Chelsea fans actually have reason to have any problems. Like, if it was a piece on Anthony Taylor, I think, Anthony Taylor's last game, if it's at Chelsea, I think it would be a bit more of a lively affair. I think they'd give him a proper send-off.
Well, well done, Mike Dean. Going to be fascinating to see who offers him more money, I'm a Celebrity, or Strictly Come Dancing. One way or another, he's going to be on one of those shows before the end of the year, I feel certain. Speaking of shows, we'll return on Thursday with our final one of the season. All four of our panellists will team up to look back over the campaign. Do join us for that if you can. For now, though, it is goodbye.
The Athletic.